The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. Author, Nicholas Carr. A Prophecy. In 1964, Marshall McLuhan published Understanding Media, The Extension of a Man, and transformed himself from an obscure academic into a star. Understanding Media was at heart a prophecy, and what it prophesied was the dissolution of the inner mind. McLuhan declared that the electric media of the 20th century, telephone, radio, movies, television, we're breaking the tyranny of text over our thoughts and sense. McLuhan understood that whenever a new medium comes along, people naturally get caught up in the information, the content it carries. The technology of the medium, however astonishing it may be, disappears behind whatever flows through its facts. Entertainment, instruction, conversation. What McLuhan saw was that in the long run, a medium's content matters less than the medium itself in influencing how we think and act. As our window into the world and onto ourselves, a popular medium molds what we see and how we see it, and eventually, if we use it enough, it changes who we are as individuals and as a society. The effects of technology do not occur at the level of opinions or concepts, wrote McLuhan. Rather, they alter patterns of perception steadily and without any resistance. The showman exaggerates to make his point, but the point stands. Media work their magic, or their mischief, on the nervous system itself. How our minds function. Internet-induced changes. Since the advent of the internet, and with the worldwide reliance on its technologies, a crucial question poses itself. What can science tell us about the actual effects that internet use is having on the way our minds work? When we go online, we enter an environment that promotes cursory reading, hurried and distracted thinking, and superficial learning. One thing is very clear. If knowing what we know today about the brain's plasticity, you were to set out to invent a medium that would rewire our mental circuits as quickly and thoroughly as possible, you would probably end up designing something that looks and works a lot like the internet. The net delivers precisely the kind of sensory and cognitive stimuli, repetitive, intensive, interactive, addictive, that have been shown to result in strong and rapid alterations in brain circuits and functions. With the exceptions of alphabets and number systems, the net may well be the single most powerful mind-altering technology that has ever come into general use. During the course of a day, most of us with access to the web spend at least a couple of hours online, sometimes much more, and during that time, we tend to repeat the same or similar actions over and over again, usually at a high rate of speed and often in response to cues delivered through a screen or a speaker. Some of the actions are physical ones. As we go through these motions, the net delivers a steady stream of inputs to our visual, somatosensory, and auditory cortices. The net engages all of our senses, except so far, those of smell and taste. And it engages them simultaneously. The net also provides a high-speed system for delivering responses and rewards, positive reinforcements, in psychological terms, which encourage the repetition of both physical and mental actions. The net's interactivity gives us powerful new tools for finding information, expressing ourselves, and conversing with others. It also turns us into lab rats constantly pressing levers to get tiny pellets of social or intellectual nourishment. Distraction of attention. Our use of the internet involves many paradoxes. But the one that promises to have the greatest long-term influence over how we think is this one. The net seizes our attention only to scatter it. We focus intensively on the medium itself, on the flickering screen, but we're distracted by the medium's rapid-fire delivery of competing messages and stimuli. Whenever and wherever we log on, the net presents us with an incredibly seductive blur. If the slow progression of words across printed pages dampened our craving to be inundated by mental stimulation, the net indulges it. It returns us to our native state of bottom-up distractedness, while presenting us with far more distractions than our ancestors ever had to contend with. The tool becomes us. When a carpenter picks up a hammer, the hammer becomes, so far as his brain is concerned, part of his hand. The plastic primate brain can incorporate tools into the sensory maps, making the artificial feel natural. In the human brain, that capacity has advanced far beyond what's seen in even our closest primate cousins. Our ability to mend with all manner of tools is one of the qualities that most distinguishes us as a species. In combination with our superior cognitive skills, it's what makes us so good at using new technologies. It's also what makes us good at inventing them. Our brains can imagine the mechanics and the benefits of using a new device before the device even exists. The tight bonds we form with our tools go both ways. Even as our technologies become extensions of ourselves, we become extensions of our technologies. But every tool imposes limitations even as it opens possibilities. The more we use it, the more we would mold ourselves to its form and function. The easier, the better? Internet companies are in fierce competition to make people's lives easier, to shift the burden from problem solving and other mental labor away from the user and onto the microprocessor. A small but telling example could be seen in the evolution of search engines. In its earliest incarnation, the Google engine was a very simple tool. You entered a keyword into the search box, and you hit the search button. But Google, facing competition from other search engines, like Microsoft's Bing, has worked diligently to make its service even more solicitous. Now, as soon as you enter the first letter of your keyword into the box, Google immediately suggests a list of popular search items that begin with that letter. Our algorithms use a wide range of information to predict the queries users are most likely wanting to see. The company explains, by suggesting more refined searches up front, we can make our searches more convenient and efficient. Automating cognitive processes in this way has become the modern programmer's stock and trade, and for good reason. People naturally seek out those software tools and websites that offer the most help and the most guidance, and shun those that are difficult to master. We want friendly, helpful software. Why wouldn't we? As we cede to software more of the toil of thinking, we are likely diminishing our brain power in subtle but meaningful ways. When a ditch digger trades his shovel for a backbone, his arm muscles weaken even as his efficiency increases. A similar trade-off may well take place as we automate the work of the mind. The seductions of technology are hard to resist, and in our age of instant information, the benefits of speed and efficiency can seem unalloyed, their desirability beyond debate. But I continue to hold out hope that we won't go gently into the future of our computer engineers and software programmers are scripting for us. How sad it would be, particularly when it comes to the nurturing of our children's minds, if we were to accept without question the idea that human elements are atomed and dispensable.